I'm James Hoyt, one of the lead designers of 4th Edition and author of the Eberron Trilogy, The Draconic Prophecies, and you're listening to The Tome.
This show is a member of Goblin, the gaming broadcast network, gbncom.com.
Welcome to The Tome, episode 51. The Tome is a D&D news, reviews, and interviews show, and I am your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. In this episode, we will be finding a home for a gnome with James Wyatt. Welcome again to episode 51 of The Tome, James Wyatt at D&D Experience, brought to you by Jeffrey D. Wynn. Thanks goes out to Jeffrey D. Wynn for bringing us these great interviews. I can't thank him enough for all of the effort that he put into in getting these interviews and sending them along to the show and getting all that arranged. It was fabulous of him to do so. And I've got a few more of these left yet to come, plus a lot of other things that I've talked about in some previous episodes. If any of this stuff is helping get you excited about 4th edition, please head on over to the Tome's Amazon store, check out the store there, maybe pre-order the books. It helps the show out. I'm not looking to make a profit or anything. I'm just looking for a way to pay the bills, and I'm hoping that someday that the Amazon store will help do that. But I don't want to ramble on too much because I'm trying to get out a whole bunch of episodes all in a row in the next couple weeks. So you've probably heard a lot of the announcements that you need to hear on previous, or you'll hear them again later on other shows. So without any further ado, here we go. James Wyatt at D&D Experience with Jeffrey D. Wynn.
I was walking through the hall and I saw those three big blow-ups of the covers of the core books. I couldn't help noticing your name was on each and every one. How did that happen?
Through a lot of madness. I'm the lead for the story team, which is a team of writers in the department now. It's kind of a new thing, less than a year old now. And as a result, I have had my fingers in all of the books pretty extensively.
So there's a coherent story tying together the default Dungeons & Dragons world.
Sort of. There's a set of assumptions about what the world is like. There's not
the points of light thing.
Yeah, that's one of them. I guess it's an expression of them.
Okay.
We've actually got a two-page spread in the Dungeon Master's Guide about what those assumptions are and what happens to the world if you start messing with them.
Okay.
Which I think is a pretty interesting way of approaching world building. That there are a lot of things that just make better sense in the game if you work with these basic assumptions. The world has been around a long time. There are ancient empires. There's no great big empires now. That gives lots of opportunity for adventurers to go delving into ancient ruins and finding old treasures, and kind of makes the basic premise of D&D make a lot of sense. And hey, there's monsters everywhere because there's no powerful military to fight them back. That's what adventurers are for.
So I'm gonna. Ever since you made this announcement on the Witcher's board, there's been some discussion about whether or not they like this idea. I'm gonna bring you a common complaint that I hear. What if I don't want to play that way? Are you telling me how to play my D&D game? What if I don't want to play with points of light?
Then the second page of that spread in the Dungeon Master's Guide is for you, because it will give you some ideas about what's going to happen when you start messing with that assumption. And, you know, if you've been playing a D&D game like that for 30 years, you don't have to change that. There's no rules hanging in the game that are going to change if you decide to go the other way. It's just...
So if I want to have a big empire that's giving my players missions to go out and do things for the empire...
Absolutely. Not a
sure.
problem.
Okay. What else? What happened with gnomes?
I'm a monster, rawr!
As a department, we have a love-hate relationship with gnomes. There are some of us who are strongly pro-gnome and some of us who are strongly anti-gnome. But what it came down to is that...
Why are some people anti-gnome? Why would some people be anti-gnome?
I don't want to speak for them, but
what are some reasons you've heard without naming names? we're not trying to.
I think there's a a common perception, or it comes down to how seriously one is willing to take one's D&D world, or wants to take it. That it's certainly possible to play gnomes straight and very serious. I played a gnome once who was an escaped Dwergar slave. He was supposed to be really bitter and brutal and savage, and everybody treated him like this cute little kid. Which made me a little crazy. But the fact is, gnomes are a part of the game. They remain part of the game in the Monster Manual right now. The Monster Manual gives you rules on how to play them as a character if you want to, and future books are going to give you more rules to do that. It's just a matter of presenting the most compelling race choices for the first place in the book.
If you're allowed, and I know there's a lot you're not allowed to talk about, but can you go into how the monster gnome is different from the player race gnome?
So when any race appears in the Monster Manual, it's also a character race. It's not built as a character. It's built as a monster.
I mean, can you compare the new gnome to previous editions?
In roughly the same way, I can compare the new elf to previous edition elves. They're different, but they're similar.
Does the new gnome have like red hair and zits on his face, and does it shoot lasers from its eyes?
I'm sure some gnomes do, but no laser beams.
Okay, what's its place in the world?
We've given them a home in the Feywild. They are Fey.
They are Fey.
As elves and Eladrin are.
Okay.
They kind of step on the brownie and leprechaun and take their stuff.
They weren't really in third edition anyway.
Correct. and hopefully they won't be reintroduced, because we wanted the gnome to be that small fae who has the potential to be cute but can also have that bitter, serious side. Sometimes Fomorians like to enslave gnomes or eat them. But they have a home in the Feywild. They coexist with Eladrin in the Feywild. I don't know. They are probably more akin to the Whisper Gnome or the Gnomes of Eberron in terms of feel than they are to the Tinker Gnomes.
The Gnomes of Eberron were like these shadowy kind of... they were the Gnomes of Zurich. They were the Illuminati. How does that tie in with like sprites who hang out in the forest?
They're stealthy. They're secretive. I'm not saying that we assume that they have a society like Zilargo in the Feywild, but they're
sneaky little bastages.
Yeah, you might say that.
Okay. All right. All right. That's enough about.
Yeah, I think that's more than enough.
My thing with gnomes was always that, well, there wasn't enough distinction between them and halflings. I liked both. There's definitely room for a short, funny creature in the game, but you don't need two of them.
And that was one of the arguments that went around too.
One with a bit of magic and one without any magic.
Right.
let's talk about halflings.
Okay.
Because I'm a big fan of halflings. Why the big change in halflings from second edition to third edition? They got skinnier. They sort of have these dreadlocks now. why did that have to happen?
From second edition to third edition, or third to fourth?
From second to third, and then to fourth.
So I don't think we've changed them very much in fourth edition, except. To give them a home.
They're now like river folk.
Right.
Before they were just like nomadic caravan people. Now they're river folk.
Let them take their nomadic caravans to the rivers. Largely because that's a kind of territory that, or terrain that hasn't been claimed by other major races. But third edition tried hard to move away from the homebody, stay-at-home hobbits of Tolkien and previous editions of the game.
Why can't halflings be the gentleman farmers who like to stay at home and eat food and smoke pipes? Why did that have to change?
I don't think it's fair to say it had to change, but it was a design decision made to change it in third edition. I don't think it was off base. The biggest problem with a story like that is that every adventurer then has to be an exception. And
Aren't adventurers already an exception?
Adventurers are exceptional people, but they don't necessarily go against the course of everything their race believes in. I mean, in Lord of the Rings, not only were Bilbo and Frodo and their companions rare for being adventurers, but they were, like, shunned because they were adventurous, you know?
That's kind of the same issue you have with, like, kobold adventurers, or...
Yes,
like,
and kobolds aren't in the player's handbook. Now, I had a really interesting conversation with one of our editors, Jeremy Crawford, several months ago now, about what appeals to him about the more hobbitish halflings and the hobbits of the Lord of the Rings, which is the warmth of them as people, the care that they demonstrate for each other. And that's something we actually tried to work back in fourth edition, to talk about the values that halflings hold dear, and really stress their love of community, their concern for each other, and that human aspect of them, not just, hey, we're crazy gypsy nomads who like to climb and jump and be all athletic, and we moved so far away from the Hobbit story in third edition, we're steering them a little bit closer back.
That's really the essence of it. I just don't like the dreadlocks.
That is concept art work that's beyond my...
I apologize if you were fans of the dreadlocks, but I don't like the dreadlocks.
Fair enough.
All right, let's move on to Eberron. I know you haven't even begun talking about.
We've begun talking about it.
You've begun talking about it. You've begun throwing around ideas that may or may not make it into a book someday in the future, maybe.
We're a little closer than that.
Okay, that's good.
Actually, I took 2 weeks of vacation right before this week of coming here, and when I came back to work on Monday, I sent Keith Baker an email saying, okay, it's time to get started. And he sent me 10 pages of his initial thoughts and comments about...
How is Keith doing?
He's, as far as I know, he's doing well. He's very excited about 4th edition, really psyched to be plunging into Eberron work again. So, and we're very glad to be working with him again.
Well, that's good. All right. So, since we're talking about Eberron, let's get back to gnomes. How are you going to explain, like, where all the gnomes went?
Gnomes aren't going anywhere.
So you still have Zalargo, they still have dragon marks, they're just different now.
Maybe. I mean, they'll be mechanically different in the same way that the elves in Eberron are mechanically different than they were in 3rd edition, but I mean, they'll have the same story.
We're talking about gnomes again. In the cartoon, like, the gnome had, like, yellow skin and webbed feet and buggy eyes. Is that how gnomes are going to look?
That was a cartoon.
Okay.
They don't look like that.
They don't have buggy green eyes and yellow webbed feet or anything like that.
The look of them has changed some. I don't remember that gnome having webbed feet.
Maybe. It's been a while since I saw it. I might be remembering. Okay. So gnomes are still there, and you're gonna. Now, are you going to bring in these new races, this, like, Eladrin and the Dragonborn?
That's one of the things.
Dragonborn.
That's one of the things we're going to get started talking about right away, is how we're going to incorporate these new races into the game.
Because, I mean, Eberron has several of its own races already. They've got the Shifters. Yep. I mean Warforged aside, I mean, there's a Warforged can have a book all on its own. They're such a popular race. But, like, then there's Shifters and Changelings and Kalashtar.
And they will all still be there.
Are you working on 4th edition psionics yet?
There's some work on that going on.
Good. You cannot comment any further than that?
I don't think so.
All right. Let's talk about your novels, because maybe you can say a bit.
I can talk about them till the cows come.
Okay, let's talk about your novels. All right, so I reviewed Storm Dragon. You're welcome. It was a pleasure to. I really like the cover. It was a nice blown up. You could see the. Anyway. And the sequel is called what?
Dragon Forge.
And then the third one will be called what?
Dragon War.
Why trilogies? Why is there this big love of trilogies? Why does everything have to be a trilogy? Why can't it be two?
So there's a funny story about that, actually.
Okay.
When they came to me and asked me to submit a pitch to write Storm Dragon, they presented it as, we want to publish our hardcover Eberron novel. So I submitted a pitch for a hardcover Eberron novel, The instruction I got was leave the ending open because there might be room for a sequel. So I submit my pitch, I leave the ending open so there might be room for a sequel. The next thing I know, I have in my hand a contract for a trilogy. So it is the way that our book department has worked in general is to think in terms of trilogies. It seems to be pretty well a staple of the fantasy genre. It's possible that we're going to be moving away from that.
Is that because of a certain very popular fantasy novel that was also a trilogy? Is that possibly why
I suspect that trend was set sometime in the 1940s, yes.
Okay. All right. So let's talk. Is this trilogy going to follow Gavin and what's his girlfriend?
Rhiannon.
Rhiannon. Yes.
Gavin and Rhiannon and Arn the Changeling remain key characters in this.
Oh, the one who we won't say what happened to him, but he sort of disappeared.
Yep.
But it's the same changeling, right? It's not a different changeling who just happens to have the same, because we would never know.
That's true.
We would never
know.
Well,
you would.
Okay.
And if you've read In the Claws of the Tiger, it's the same changeling.
I don't remember. I remember I picked up In the Claws of the Tiger because it had Rakshasha on the cover, and I'm a big fan of Rakshasha. And then I read it, and they're just like mooks. They're just like dungeon fodder.
They are Zakya Rakshasas, and they're being cut down by a character of a level appropriate to do so. So... But yeah, the changeling is, it's going to be a spoiler on that book, but the epilogue of that book features a character who's been throughout the whole book, suddenly revealed to be a changeling, who then becomes a major character in Storm Dragon and beyond.
Okay, so what can you tell us about the plot of the last two books? What does this mean for Eberron? Is Eberron in danger?
Yes.
Okay.
Eberron is in danger, particularly the northwest.
Aundare and the Eldeen. Are we going to get into the Demon Wastes? Because I don't think that's anywhere that any novel's ever been yet.
We do, in fact, go to the Demon Wastes in Dragonforge.
Yay!
Yeah, and back out again. Amazingly enough.
Wow.
And to Arganesson.
Okay. We've been there briefly in some books, but we haven't really. Now that we've got a source book there for it, we can go there, I guess.
Yeah. Something not covered in the Arganesson source book because it's a fourth edition thing. In Dragonforge, Gavin and Rhiannon go to Arganesson and meet Dragonborn. So, fourth edition Eberron is on the horizon. So I've been thinking about it for a long time. Actually.
What is the relationship now between novels and the canon?
Eberron has no canon.
Eberron has no canon. So like this. So at the end of Storm Dragon, there was a huge military conflict where lots of people died. And you're saying that's never, ever going to show up in a source book?
If it shows up in a source book, it'll be along the lines of an adventure seed idea.
It'll be a footnote.
Something like that. And, you know, historically speaking, it's not a hugely significant conflict because the outcome didn't change anything.
Lots of people died.
Lots of people died, but national borders didn't shift.
Are now widows or orphans.
Historically speaking, the way we think about canon Eberron, or about Eberron in general, is that it's a place for you to tell your stories. And it's a place for our novelists to tell their stories. Those stories don't necessarily have any connection to each other, either different novels to each other, or novels to the stories that you're going to tell in that world.
I've read everyone since they came out, and I'm a big Eberron fan. I noticed that they tend to avoid major NPCs or major... Like, I haven't seen Merrick's Decaneth or Lord of Blades or... any of those people appear directly in a novel. Like, you've heard about them, but they haven't come on stage to say, "Hi." Like, are we going to see, or even like King Caius? He would be an excellent character to appear in a novel. Will we see that eventually?
I can't say. I mean, that I don't know. It's possible.
Do novel writers have license to do things with these characters? Like, I mean,
we would have to talk about what they want to do. and how they're going to handle it.
And
I talk a lot to the editor who's primarily responsible for the Ever Online. We keep in touch about that sort of thing.
So. I'm all for a book where, like, King Caius comes in and the heroes kill him, but since there is no canon, it didn't really happen. You can still kill him in your own way. He can come back in another novel. It didn't really happen.
I can see that happening.
I kind of like that approach.
Yeah, I can imagine that happening.
Okay. Good. Work on it.
I'll see what I can do.
Okay.
I have someplace else I have to be.
Well, it was very nice talking to you.
My pleasure.
And,
thank you.
I hope you listen to my podcast.
I will, I promise.
Well, there we go. That's James Wyatt at D&D Experience. Now, a quick promo from a show that I think you might enjoy.
Here at Newtown Radioactive, we grow our science fiction the old-fashioned way. Whether it's your pseudo-cyberpunk dystopian future.
There are fields. Endless fields. Where human beings are no longer born. We are grown.
Or dark, mysterious oozes lurking beneath the surface of the Earth.
That is not water. Lifeblood of the Earth. Lifeblood of the Earth.
Or our ongoing experiments into alternative fuels.
This is heavy duty, Doc. This is great. Does it run like on regular unleaded gasoline?
Unfortunately, no. It requires something with a little more kick. Plutonium!
You can rest assured that Nuketown uses only the finest speculative fiction and geek ingredients in our homegrown podcasts. Join us every other Monday for speculative fiction and game reviews, geek commentary, and whatever else we decide to ramble on about.
Listen, we found some beryllium on a nearby planet. And we might be able to get there if we reconfigure the solar matrix in parallel for endothermic propulsion. What do you think?
Nuketown Radioactive, because if it's not glowing, it's not good for you. Check us out at www.nuketown.com/podcast.
Okay, well, that's episode 51. As always, I want to encourage you to send in your emails or audio comments to thetomeshow@gmail.com and send in your feedback. Another great place to do that is over at the forum at thetomeshow.com. Also, you can help the show get noticed with reviews on iTunes or votes on different sites like Podcast Alley. But more than that, go out and tell your friends or other people who might be interested in the show. Word of mouth goes a long way to helping the show find an audience, and I appreciate that. Also, don't forget to check out our Amazon store. The show gets a part of the proceeds, and that helps keep us on the air. And once again, you can find all of that at thetomeshow.com. Don't forget to check out our partner podcast, Fistful of Comics and Games, at fistfulofcomics.com, and Gamers Haven at CanadianCrusaders.com. This has been episode 51, James Wyatt at D&D Experience of
The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome.
Hi, I'm James Wyatt, one of the lead designers for 4th edition and author of Eberron Trilogy, The Draconic Prophecies, and you're listening to The Tome Show. The Tome.
Sure.
Something. I'm sorry.
James, it's only Friday.
Oh, yeah.
Cut.
It's, well, the good news is it's picking you up now.
Excellent.
That's good. Okay,
you want me to do that again? Because I can do that again.
If like you want to, sure.
And what does he want me to say at the end? You're listening to?
You're listening to The Tome.
The Tome.
The Tome.
No show.
Yeah, you can be silly, you can be serious, you can be a... use your best DM voice.
My best DM voice.
Don't make me an acrobatics check.
No. Hi, I'm James Wyatt. I'm going to start over yet again. I'm James Wyatt, one of the lead designers of 4th edition and author of the Eberron Trilogy, The Draconic Prophecies, and you're listening to The Tome.
Now you can.
Well, it had those yahoos in the background, so it's fine. All right, so...
Thank you.
Thank you. It was very nice talking to you.
You too, thanks.
Bye-bye. I'm a monster, rawr! I'm a monster, rawr! I'm a monster, rawr! I'm a monster, rawr!